Hey everybody, this is Tom Salemi of Device Talks. Welcome back to the Device Talks weekly podcast. We just concluded a very successful Device Talks Boston. Thank you to everyone who was part of it. It was a huge and really fantastic crowd in every aspect of the word fantastic. Just great questions, great insights, great experiences, great meetings on the floor. Attendance was up 40% from the last year. We had probably that 40% more speakers than we did last year as well. Great content from BD, Baxter, Boston Scientific, Stryker, Medtronic. We had Intuitive there. We had CMR Surgical there. Presentations by Distal Motion, Quantum Surgical, just goes on and on and on. So just fantastic couple of days. Thank you to everyone who's been posting on LinkedIn. I've actually had a hard time keeping up with the posts, and I'm actually headed off on vacation, going to pick up my son at school. So I'll try to keep up, but I'm going to also unplug just a little bit. But it was a fantastic 2 days. Thank you to everyone who is part of it, and I'm very happy to bring you this episode of the Device Talks weekly podcast, which of course we, as tradition holds, we record live at the end of the podcast. And this was a very great episode featuring, of course, Chris Neumarker, who is editor-in-chief at Mass Device, but we also had managing editor Kayleen Brown, who was fantastic at the meeting. She hosted our Women in MedTech breakfast and had a rousing and inspiring interview with Nina Goodhart of Medtronic, who also spoke later in the day, and just another fantastic addition to the agenda. We also had Paul Melnichuk. He is vice president and general manager of Spectrum Medical Device Advanced Components, and it's part of Spectrum Plastics Group, which, of course, is a DuPont business. So Paul was on the panel, and Spectrum did very kindly sponsor this podcast episode. So happy to have them as part of our Device Talks Boston experience. And finally, Holly Scott, vice president and senior partner and old friend of the Mullings Group. So we walk through our highlights of the day. I won't go over what they are. You can listen to them. It's a shorter podcast episode, probably a little over 30 minutes, and had a very nice question from the audience as well. So thank you again to everyone who was part of Device Talks Boston. It really really was a great 3 days, actually, because we opened up with a tour of Medtronic surgical robotics offices in the Seaport District of Boston. Had about 70 of our closest friends there, and that was just a delight to actually walk it through the halls of a medical device building like that, to see Hugo in operation. I actually got to use Hugo, and I didn't do too bad. I can't even handle my kid's PlayStation, but I was able to manipulate a surgical robotic system. So very happy about that experience. So all in all, again, thank you to everyone who was part of it. And thank you to Spectrum Plastics for sponsoring this podcast. And thank you all for listening to this podcast as well. All right, let's get this podcast started. Oh, one more thing, of course, before we begin the podcast, I'd like to thank all of our sponsors for Device Talks Boston. We had so many great sponsors, both providing content upstairs, very great content upstairs, but also so many people on the show floor. So thank you to them for their support. All right, now let's get this podcast started. All right, you ready for this?
Ready.
How are you, sir?
Doing well, Tom. Doing well.
You a little tired?
I'm feeling great.
Oh, good. Do you like when I took your notes for the interview you were going to conduct a little while ago and removed them from the room for a good 10 minutes?
I mean, that was a good exercise in like being calm under pressure. It was good.
A little prank, a little hazing.
Yeah, exactly.
We both laughed.
We both laughed. We laughed. we We didn't cry in front of people, that was good.
We turned into a bit of a Laurel and Hardy movie at the end of this, I think. But we're finishing strong with this podcast.
That's right. This is awesome.
All right, great. So we've got we're very happy to have a few special guests with us. We've got Paul Nichuk of Spectrum Plastics, who's going to give us some assessment of his take. He's going to introduce us to Spectrum as well. But we're all, the mission here is just to share some high points, two or three high points from the day. We don't have to split the atom, I don't think, but I think we can just give people a flavor of what happened. And very happy to have Holly Scott of the Mullings Group on our podcast once again. Welcome back, Holly.
It's a real pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
And over on the far side, our managing editor, spectacular managing editor, Kayleen Brown. You did a great job today. Kayleen Brown, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you. That's
Woohoo!
So nice.
I was dragging this morning because I had two unsolid nights of sleep. And seriously, your MedTech Women speech and presentation and the talk with Nina was like very uplifting. I was like, I feel better. So thank you.
It's
thank
one
you
of the highlights that. Of the show.
Am I wrong, Holly? Am I wrong?
Let me tell you something. You brought the fire.
Oh.
I didn't need my coffee after you opened that. We were all moved.
Yeah,
it was great. Your presentation with Nina and the poignant takeaways of what we can do on a day-to-day basis was perfect. It was perfect. So, yeah. You know, like I've given you the kudos privately. I've given Nina the kudos privately and also just to collectively say that we've got to do that again,
yeah,
right?
We do.
That's a first of many.
We do.
That's
no,
a first
it was
of many.
We launched the Kayleen launched the MedTech Women podcast late last year, early this year. We'll be launching a second season of the podcast. It'll be Women in MedTech podcast. So we definitely wanted to build an event around that great piece of content and those great stories. So we thought, well, let's just put that out there and see if anyone wants it. And the little cracker like disappeared in like a day. And then we put another cracker out, and that was gone too. And before we sold out and couldn't fit anymore, we got very emphatic Slack messages from our conference team. Was like, it is sold out. I'm like, okay, we get the message. No more. Can you just squeeze two more, three more in? But we'll take that into account next year, definitely, and make it bigger in size. I don't think it needs to be, it can be maybe longer. Maybe we'll talk about it later. We don't need to strategize
There's
right
time,
now.
There's time, Tom. There's time.
We have some time. The wheels are already spinning. So thank you for the start today. Paul, tell us, it's great to have you here because we talk to speakers, and obviously we're the organizers. And I know you've spoken before, but Spectrum's also been a great sponsor of ours. Just talk a bit about your perspective on the event, and within that, if you want to talk about Spectrum Plastics a little bit, love to hear it.
Yeah, okay, good. Thanks, Tom. Why don't I start by just a brief intro of who Spectrum Plastics Group is. We're a contract manufacturer to the medical device industry and now a part of DuPont.
Yep.
And that acquisition occurred last August. And, you know, the aim is really to be a major supplier to the medtech industry. We supply 26 of the top 30 OEM brands amongst thousands of other customers. And what I find interesting with this audience is you've got both entrepreneurs who are, you know, really looking forward with new technologies and innovations, and investors, and you know, being able to partner with a supplier and a partner that can that's already on the ASL of those top 30 OEMs, you know, is valuation to the entrepreneur, you know, kind of money in the bank to the investor. So that's, you know, kind of an important point.
How mature a startup are you looking to partner with? Because when we were building these content, when we started building the conference, we definitely brought in Paul Grand and MedTech Innovator to bring some energy and some life, more life to the event. And he more than delivered, but he's also bringing late stage Series C, Series D companies who are legitimate companies who are hiring. I'm guessing that's sort of the type of company you work with, or do you work with smaller companies as well?
I think we can really support at any stage,
yeah.
But with a company of our size and scope and reach, it probably would be easier to work with a smaller firm at the very early stages.
Oh, interesting.
And however, we have a web store where you can get a lot of off-the-shelf components. And so for a design engineer, and we're talking here about single-use physical stuff, not AI and data. We'll get to that, I'm sure, you know, in this chat. But with respect to components and a lot of off-the-shelf stuff, you can get that at, you know, in our web store and put something together for functional testing and such. Mm-hmm. So that's a very rapid way of getting something, you know, visualized and materialized. And then, you know, we come in and we say, okay, let's look at design for manufacturing and how we're going to make now, you know, thousands, tens of thousands, and millions of these things.
Great. Okay. Yeah. Well, we'll get back to some of the other stuff you do with startups and some of your other services. Do you have any takeaways or any high points of the event other than the recording of this podcast in front of hundreds of people here?
Yeah.
Hundreds here.
You know, having been to a handful of these now over the years, both on the West Coast and here, I'm really amazed at the difference in the theme. You know, it was physical devices, you know, over the last few years, and just overnight, it's all become around data science and AI and intelligence and sensors that are, you know, bringing in data. And I'm really stunned at the speed at which the pivot in the innovation dollars are going. What do you think about that?
It's not us. I mean, the way these conferences operate, they're very much a temperature of the environment out there. We reach out to people and say, what do you want to hear about? What do you want to talk about? And then that we reflect that. We don't have a little box or a list where we're checking one of these and one of those. We certainly want it to be balanced, but you're right. I mean, more and more people are talking about AI, and we can talk about the panel that Kayleen led in a little bit. But talking about more software, when we do webinars, software as a medical device webinars do really well. So, and robotics, of course. We had a lot of robotics here today. So, no, I agree. It's definitely increasingly becoming a tech conference, which is great, I think, for the content. I have to do a lot more research to understand what the heck I'm asking about, but it's really, it brings a lot of energy to what we're talking about.
Well, this trend's been building in the industry for years.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about the digitization of med tech, but it definitely, like, you know, this year it's definitely feeling like, you know, everybody's talking about AI, everybody's talking about, you know, sensors. This seems to be a way that the industry really seems that we could innovate. You know, the flip side that I was reassuring Paul about right before, you know, we sat here was, like, there still are physical devices that are made. You can't operate on somebody with pure data yet, you know, so.
Yes. You still have to touch a patient. You have to sometimes intervene and go inside a patient.
Components need to be made.
And those components, you know, there's a lot of interesting science and evolution right now with, you know, materials that are being deemed harmful that need to now be replaced. There's a lot of innovation around ever decreasing size and dimensions and tolerancing. So there's a lot of state-of-the-art engineering that's required right now in making interventional catheters ever smaller, you know, to induce less and less harm
interventional
and improve patient outcomes.
Catheter space, surgical robotics requires, like, higher tolerance.
Exactly, as well, yeah.
I had a great conversation with Brent at Isometric about miniaturization, and he just was demonstrating how small they can go. And I said, do you have, like, an idea of if there's a limit? Like, are you going to open up a hole in the space-time continuum at some point? You've gone so small. And he was like, oh, I hope so. That'd be great.
I've been visiting contract manufacturers where, you know, they have, like, they hand me a little vial that looks like it has dust inside it. It's like, oh, these are components. It's like, there's components in there? You know, it's amazing.
Right. So I'm very excited about the innovation in those areas, you know, that we participate in.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, Kayleen, we'll get back to AI in a moment because you had a great panel. But Holly, you're our guest. Anything you want to call out first, the highlight of the day?
Well, I think to, you know, just follow up on Paul's conversation or Paul's point here, and definitely Chris, the movement of hardware software that's been evolving over the years, and it's not an or, it's an and. You know, there's still certainly a need for hardware, but isn't it nice to be in a time in our human evolution where many of our hardware or electrical bodily problems have been solved and many of our plumbing problems have been solved, and now we're looking at how can we make more intelligent devices that give us more information, that not only give us better measurement and more holistic management tools, but also give us insight into what could be. So the idea of AI is giving intelligence and giving information to make better decisions sooner to get better outcomes. So it's a exciting new world. It's daunting for us old med tech people to look at the AI software side, but I'm telling you, in our firm, 68%-ish of our placements last year involved some kind of software component, and it's not going away. And I think it's amazing. I think there's so much potential that we're just at the cusp of. That is the future. That's the future, and it's not just healthcare. Look, it's everywhere. Yeah. It's every part of our life. It's every part of our life. So we happen to focus in one segment that is fairly new to it, but it's exciting.
Kayleen, you have been devouring AI-related products, both on the content side, the stuff that helps us do our jobs, but also on the medical device side, and you're working on another new podcast series, Device Talks AI, that'll be rolled out tomorrow. Are you working on that tomorrow?
I'm going to run back to my hotel room and finish that.
That'd be great. Would you get that out there? Yeah.
Can we get an AI to produce the Device Talks AI?
Well, then I'd be out of job.
Oh, yeah. Don't do that.
Though, you know, there's a risk there, too. Now, I see where you're going with this, Tom, and, you know, there's a lot to talk about when it comes to artificial intelligence, and to your point, Paul, it really is connected health, and artificial intelligence is really enhancing that. And, you know, Chris, you had mentioned kind of at the beginning that we're seeing this as a trend that's been coming, but I would actually argue that generative AI has given us the vocabulary and the approachability to talk about it, perhaps, for the first time. And now we're able to put it in the concepts into buckets. It wasn't really approachable prior to generative AI. Once you're actually using it, now you're like, oh, this is something that I understand. And
people understand it, exactly.
Exactly. And there were some great quotes from the panel that I led, and I'll go into that earlier. But some of the highlights was, artificial intelligence is actually stupid intelligence. Artificial intelligence should be snack-sized artificial intelligence. So there's these great quotes kind of talking about how it still takes this the human element, and it's about the input to really get the right kind of output, and it's really the training of the module. So your closing keynote that we just concluded with Rajit Kamal of Medtronic, Rajit said a quote that I absolutely love, and I think it works perfectly here, where he says that he speaks kind of in tandem, rather, about artificial intelligence needing the collective genius. And I think that's really what we're talking about here, the trend. So artificial intelligence has helped make opportunities. You know, we've already talked about how AI can help the workforce, getting some minutes back, helping clinicians connect with their patients, helping clinicians communicate with their patients. Dr. Helen Marianos of Sanofi, she said specifically that, Sandra Nogli from Boston Scientific, both of them had communicated that they use generative AI to write emails to patients.
Oh, that's great.
And part of that, and I was thinking, was this concept that you wanted to be more empathetic or change your tone, or you're too busy and you wanted to write a full email. And I was shocked to find out that they wanted to remember anniversaries. They wanted to ask about how their children are doing. And that's just information that they can't keep with you. So AI is really helping humans be more human. AI is helping robots have more capabilities.
You know, something I'll have a confession. Like, if I need to write like a clutch email, I mean, I'll go on a ChatGPT and paste that in. They're like, what is the tone of this? How do I sound? You know, and that it's useful.
To that point, that's the training of the AI.
Yeah.
So if you just said, write me an email, you're gonna
get gonna be, yeah.
Like, hey, Kayleen, you did a great job. Peace out.
Yeah.
You know, but if you say, this is the tone, this is what I want to communicate, here are key pieces of information, and then you ask questions.
Yeah.
What am I missing? What more information do you need to get the best output? And that's how you use generative AI.
I have your optimistic viewpoint about that. I don't think the AI is going to replace people. I think the AI is augmenting our abilities, and that, you know, the people that are going to thrive in this environment are the people that, you know, that use it and figure out, you know, how to advance with it.
And use it collectively, using our collective genius. So kind of last
thought,
and then I'll
work together.
Yeah, exactly. Together we're stronger, really. And, you know, I'll get off the soapbox of AI here shortly, because I really am so passionate about it. But the one real takeaway that I have uncovered over this past year, and I uncovered during Device Talks Boston, was AI has not just democratized generative AI has not just democratized AI, but it has brought the different silos of life sciences together in a way that I've certainly never seen in my nearly 20 years. So we had, Helen Mariano Sanofi sitting next to two giant medtechs, Dr. Ha Hong, Medtronic, Sandra Ongley, Sandra Nagli. It's been a very long 2 days, so thank you. Boston Scientific, Cody Simmons with Dermasensor. And here we have a pharma perspective sitting in the chair, Jets and Sharks, and the entire panel, all four of them are nodding. Yes, that's exactly how I feel. So you have an emerging med tech who's going, yes, Dr. Hong, that's exactly how I feel. And at the end of it, I said, well, what are your takeaways? What's your final thoughts here? And they said, we all think the same. We have the same brain. Call me after. Here's my cell phone. Mm-hmm. I want to pick your
brain.
That's
awesome.
Yeah. So you're having big pharma go, MedTech, tell me your story. You're having the emerging MedTech going, you just went through the FDA process. I'm scared. How do I get through that process? Can you walk me through it? Mm-hmm. AI is bringing people together.
Paul, any thoughts? You had sort of brought up AI earlier on what you were sitting in some of these sessions, I imagine, or at least.
Yeah, I think we've kind of explored it. You know, you did a very colorful.
She always does.
Dazzle.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, yeah.
You got this
so,
down.
Yeah.
She throws some heat. No, mm-hmm. I mean, the AI I thought was also interesting was in Rajette's presentation where they demonstrate how AI can show which tissue to cut, which mm-hmm. tissue to not cut. But also there's a question at the end of that session where someone asked if they were going to pursue a Tesla-like model where they would have a subscription service and provide additional services, and mm-hmm. he didn't hesitate. He's like, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Like, Hugo's going to be an AI service,
that's
basically.
Really. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, Holly, are you hearing that in conversations, and did that surprise you? Because it didn't surprise
didn't
me,
surprise
but
me. No, because Tesla's mantra has always been to reduce cognitive load in mundane tasks, right? Like driving. So what are we looking to do overall? And imaging has been doing this for a while. This is not a new concept. Imaging has used AI for years now. This is an idea of getting more of this opportunity across surgical navigation, across any kind of clinical domain area where you can really make decisions that are going to expedite the process of intervention. And that can happen across the border. So a lot of the young companies are baking in mm-hmm. the idea in their value proposition of how are we going to reduce cognitive load in a safe and effective way. It's there. It's not going away. Mm-hmm. And it's a good thing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So going back to your car example, so if AI is the full self-driving brains behind the navigation in the body, we make the wheels and the chassis and the mm-hmm. car that gets you inside and in the right way, and it's getting ever smaller and ever precise and ever compliant mm-hmm. to the highways within the body, mm-hmm. and that's really exciting. And while there's been a lot of advances in transcatheter, right now the next vista I would say is in the brain, mm-hmm. and actually applying therapies and interesting interventions, inside the brain to treat a number of diseases, mm-hmm. and that's something you can expect to see in the next decade.
Yep. Neurostim and neuromod, and it's just a really hot space right now.
Yeah, we had Synchron and InBrain on our neuro panel and
neural interfaces. Yeah,
brain computer interfaces, and it's. Mm-hmm. Definitely was the spirit of that, I think, conversation was, we've been talking about neuro like AI, well, not like AI, but like connected health for years now, for decades, and it feels like we've got firm footing. You have the Axonics acquisition, which has given a lot of neuro people something to hang a hat on and mm-hmm. to feel good about. Whether they're the same type of company of Axonics or not, doesn't matter. They now can say, look, there's an exit. Mm-hmm. And Imran Ebo was on our panel, and that's one thing that he's with Action Potential Venture Capital. He's looking for interesting neuro ideas. He's obviously invested in them, but the lack of a clear exit, you haven't seen a neuro company go public, I think. There probably has been a few, but it's not a primary route, and acquisitions have been sporadic, and certainly they have gone public. Some have gone public, and they've not done well in the market. But if you get an Axonix, you get a few more of those, you start racking up some wins, then venture capitalists feel a little more confident about committing capital to it. So, so that is an area we're going to see.
Yeah, you've seen, too, the maturity of the neuro market, right? So you've seen neuro for many years was a much tougher uphill battle. Not only is the anatomy much more challenging than cardiovascular, but you also have a much more conservative call point. That clinician is notoriously conservative. And you talk about the idea of implanting and talk about BCI. You know, it sounded 20 years ago like sci-fi, and now here we are. And really it comes back to brass tacks, right? We're talking about materials. Mm-hmm. We're talking about how are we going to make it more biocompatible. Mm-hmm. That's MedTech 101. Yep. So, you know, we're back to basics in a lot of ways as well.
Right.
It may seem clouded and you know, the fairy dust is all around the digital side, but at the end of the day, it's still got to be safe and effective. FDA has still got to bless it. It's still got to go through the same rigor. So we're not far off.
Holly, I'm going to jump in here because you said it has to be biocompatible. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. The and to that is I've noticed in our discussions that the trend is designing for biocompatibility, designing for sterilization, for example, early on. Earlier, the better, you know, having all the different stakeholders sit at the table and talk about what does the device look at the end so that you get to that go, no-go decision quicker, so there's less waste. So you really hit the nail on the head here, but the trend is starting to have these discussions early on about these late-stage implications.
Let me offer one innovation that enables that kind of rapid iteration is in 3D printing or additive manufacturing.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. And so, for example, some of the things that we've developed are additive printers that don't just print like in the material used for prototypes, but actual biocompatible materials that you can print two dimension, two size, and even in a validated clean room environment, so that if you're doing clinical trials, you don't have to spend the hundreds of thousands of dollars to get the tooling done just to make a run of 10 or 20, that you could just kind of print them for biocompatibility studies. So that's an example of that enables that kind of rapid development and refinement before you then commit to the large-scale manufacturing. And we're actually right now also printing metal tooling in the same way. We have a process that's called Mantle 3D, where you can actually 3D print stainless steel, H13
awesome.
Steel. Yeah, that is, it's kind of a radical process capability right now. So super excited about these enablers that are going to enable much faster iterations in device development.
I mean, titanium 3D printing is like really exciting. I mean, they've been doing that at Mayo Clinic, like, you know, for special implants. I mean, that's really cool stuff.
We had Naomi Murray of Stryker here.
I was just
presentation. Yep.
No, I was like, oh, Naomi's here.
Behind you. No, yeah. I'm pointing to you.
Come on up, Naomi.
Come on up.
This is your life, Kayleen Brown.
Exactly. As you were talking, I knew exactly what you were talking about because of our session with Naomi Murray of Stryker and really understanding what additive manufacturing is and the differences between 3D printing, which there aren't much, but it's really about the vocabulary sort of behind it. And what was so encouraging was this rapid prototyping, this fail fast method. And that's really encouraging because you can go through design iterations faster. Again, goes back to that less waste idea. And you can bring devices to market that are still incredibly safe for patients because you're able to test more often.
Right.
So it changes the speed and
And the cost.
And the cost, because it's all about the money, honey.
That all plays into the other word that I heard a lot throughout our show, which was sustainability.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Like it's just a big issue, and I even like our first big keynote with Elizabeth McCombs, the CTO of BD. I mean, she was talking a lot about data, and she was talking a lot about AI and sensors, but you know, there was a really good point where she was talking about sustainability and how like that had become so important. And that, you know, like it could, you know, actually save, you know, a lot of cost in manufacturing. But the flip side is you can't, you know, sacrifice, you know, the safety and the efficacy. You can't sacrifice quality as you're doing it. So there's all kinds of really, you know, fun, you know, design innovation challenges right now around it.
Chris, you reminded me. So, you know, as a member of DuPont now, there's two themes, safety and sustainability that you just mentioned. On the sustainability front, we have a program where we take manufacturing aids that are made out of plastics, and those get ground up and reused. They're not necessarily being put into people's bodies with medical devices. We're not there, but there's manufacturing aids mm-hmm. that are ancillary to the process of making devices where there's some single-use components that can be ground up and reused. So we're doing that right now, yeah. And safety is absolutely number one priority.
And we had Eileen Buckley and Catherine Unger, they're the sustainability officers and have other duties as well at Stryker and Boston Scientific, respectively. And clearly it's on the radar and built into the management teams of the major med techs.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're working with a lot of companies.
It has to be the number one priority before anything else.
Yeah. Holly, any?
I'm thinking about how many number one priorities above everything else we have to have.
AI, data.
There's an interesting contrast with another engineering firm who the young engineer said, look, it's actually faster for us to build a lot of stuff and see what doesn't work than to just take the time to kind of... So mm-hmm. materials are cheaper than time, mm-hmm. which seem to run counter to sustainability. So there is still a deep vein of I don't want to say waste, but again, not valuing
competing
materials
needs.
As much. What's that?
There's competing needs.
Yeah, there's competing needs. And when you've got to get something done, you got to get it done. And as we know, you know, you're tired, you're falling asleep. You know you shouldn't have that candy bar at 8 o'clock, but it's going to keep you up until midnight to get that paper written or whatever. Mm-hmm. You do it, even though you know you're going to pay for it the
you
next
You don't want to be carrying around that soda can, but you don't see recycling.
I tried to drink a Pepsi, a cola today.
A cola?
A soft drink, a tonic, if I'm in Boston. I told Holly was there. I'm like, I can't do it. Like, I won't do it. I'll get another cup of coffee, splash it in my face, and get back out there. So, Holly, what were some of the other high points other than that conversation you and I had in the speaker room?
Yeah, that was definitely.
That was definitely. Yeah,
I do believe there's a common theme in prioritizing early, and I mean that in a true, you know, down to earth way. When you're building a product or a company or portfolio, thinking about those dark corners early. We have the opportunity, because we're standing on so many years of innovation, to learn along the way. And we all are, many, all, through hard knocks and then bringing it back. But learn from those innovators and those pioneers. If you're in neurovascular, make sure you soak in everything they did, right and wrong, clinically. Product development wise, regulatory wise, and I hear that common theme, because as an industry, we are in a bright new world where the digital domain and FDA is still trying to figure out how are we going to make sure all of this works. So make sure you wrap in early those considerations, whether it's safety, product development, regulatory, clinical path, reimbursement.
Yep.
How are we going to commercialize this? What are we thinking about? We had a chat earlier on, you know, the C-suite. How important is it to hold on to the founder? When do we start talking about leadership transition? So all those things, the earlier we can have the conversations and start setting the tone. Time is money when you're working to get a medical device to market. So I think there's been a real common theme with the conversations I've had, especially across the innovative side, about trying to do things better and earlier and thinking ahead behind those dark corners.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So we're closing in on our time. We can go a little bit over, but I think it would be fun to... Yeah, let's actually... Anyone from the audience have any
questions?
Or just takeaways? Comments? They all want to go home. Just let us go
Come
home.
On, someone.
For God, stop talking, Tom.
I see someone.
We see
oh,
him.
Yeah, we do.
No, it's not. Can you try that again, Sean? Or get another one? We can edit this part out.
There we go.
There we go.
Hello? Can you hear
yeah,
me?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Hi, I'm Katie Karmelek from Champer. And I just want to say at least a key takeaway from the past few days. I've been coming to Device Talks for many years. This was by far the best one yet. And the theme for me was connectivity across the board. And it was, you know, there was devices from the MedTech Innovator that were connected devices, right? So it's very literal. The Medtronic's Hugo robot, they're connecting ORs virtually up to 50 people, and that was so cool. But also this morning's breakfast, connecting, use dedicated time to connect women in one room, and not just sitting there watching people talk, but saying, talk to each other, right? And so I just want to say thank you. I think you put a lot of effort into the content. Every session, I learn something new, and after 20 years in the industry, I love learning new things still, and that's always hard at conferences to, you know, sometimes it feels very surface level, but you really took it to a new depth this year in a lot of ways, so I just want to say thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I will not cry, but thank you. That's very nice. I'll take a moment just to thank all of the great speakers who come, give us their time and their efforts and their insights and really make this a great program. We obviously couldn't do it without them, but I'm shocked at people like Brian Miller of Intuitive flew over here in a red eye. Landed here, we were talking to him in this speaker room. Chris was propping him up with coffee, and I'm like, you want to take questions from the audience? He's like, yeah, sure, whatever. He's like, there. I don't know what I'm going to say, but... But he flew over here in a red eye, and he's like, I'm like, why'd you take a red eye? He's like, I just have so much work to do. But how easy would it have been for him to say, you know what, I can't make it? A few weeks ago, obviously not yesterday, but he's here, and that is really powerful, so we're really grateful. Any other thoughts from the audience? Mm-hmm. All right, so we'll do one quick round of what didn't we mention. So you want to go? You're nodding. You want to go, Kaylee?
Yeah, I'm champing at the bit here.
All right. Fire away.
I would not have expected I'd be so excited about would be advancements in heart disease research. So there's a very recent trial called the SMART trial. It's collaboration between Medtronic and Edwards Life Sciences, and it's enrolled predominantly women. It's the first cardiovascular clinical study that has done that. So for the first time in hundreds of years, we're finally looking at data that speaks primarily to women and our own needs when it comes to designing devices for heart health. And we have immediately already seen that there's a difference, believe it or not, between a 5'3", 100 and something pound woman and a 6'5" tall, you know, 200 pound man. And the data coming out of it, so very clear that there's a difference. It will, and this is not a prediction, this is a fact, I'm telling you now, you're hearing it first, it will change the way that we design cardiovascular devices in the future, starting today. So check it out, SMART trial. Okay. Incredible.
Sounds awesome.
Chris Neumarker, what did we not mention?
I would just mention one of my big, really like, oh, wow, that's interesting moments during the conference was when I was moderating a panel with Boston Scientific officials about pulse field ablation and FARAPULSE. And pulse field ablation is so, so hot right now as this new technology to treat AFib. And I thought it was interesting. I mean, there's some companies that have... ablation systems that are coming out that are toggling between pulse field ablation and RF. And the Boston Scientific officials were like, you know, they kind of view those systems more like hybrid cars. They said they thought pure FA, you know, they compared, you know, pure PFA more to like electric cars. And, you know, they said that they think as PFA gets validated more, improved more, that pure PFA is going to be the future. So they're kind of making their bet on that. And I thought it was really interesting to learn that.
Mm-hmm. Holly, what did we not mention?
I'll say that you touched on both areas, but I think I took it a little bit deeper. The Brian Miller conversation to me was quite interesting because you think about where Intuitive came from and how they are dominating the surgical robotics space, and intelligence has been such a black magic to figure out over the years. And to see someone like Brian speak to an audience that is ranges from innovators to investors to strategics and the like, and really sharing insight on that type of transition and how the company thought about it. Because so many young organizations struggle with, I've got a device that tells us this right now, and there's data, and I know there's value, but I don't know what to do with that, and I don't know how much emphasis to put on that right now. So it's weighing that, and when does that become part of a value proposition? How much investment resources do we put into creating it? So it made me pause and think. So that was a big takeaway, and it was something I'm going to follow up with him on. He came through Computer Motion, and he has such a legacy, mm-hmm. a history, that I think he has a lot of nuggets that will be valuable for me to offer to younger organizations as they're thinking about that, incorporating into the value. So that was something that was, I believe, quite powerful. The connected piece, too, that, again, has been highlighted, we have to think about connectivity and the information that we're able to gather on a consistent basis as empowering the individual. Let's forget about the patient. Let's forget about the clinician for a minute. These we're going from a world where it's a novelty to wear a watch or to capture data to where it's the norm. That's what's going to happen. We are a few years away from every one of us having a device that monitors all of these biological parameters. And it'll be self-serving, and it'll have a clinical purpose, and it'll also help carve out our future care plan. So we are on this train, and it's going this way. So to me, when I see companies that are really hyper-focused in this space and have the wearables, and maybe they're clumsy, and you know they're trying to figure out how and where, those are the pioneers in this space, and they are the future. So that's a big takeaway for me. And I also just want to lastly comment, yep. and in big thanks, because this is an important conference to us, and this is by far the best one yet. Yay. And Boston is always fun for Device Talks, and this one was tremendous turnout, and everyone I've spoken with has had great things to say about the everything they're getting from it.
That's fantastic. Paul?
I just want to also echo you, Holly. Thank you. I think it's very engaging, very stimulating, and very inspiring. So I think my heart is warmed when I hear each of you talk about applications and therapies, because in my mind I'm thinking about the products we're making today mm-hmm. that are shipping tomorrow morning, and you know, from really hardworking, dedicated, committed team people that are team members that are shipping these every day, and it's like, oh, we make that. Oh, we make that. And it's like, it's kind of cool.
That's great. Mine will be, I was going to go to portable surgical robots. We had CMR as a keynote. They did a great job. Distal Motion Quantum. But I want to really give a shout out to the folks on our exhibit floor. We had a recording booth down there where we did Amira Winiter and Kayleen Brown and I did one or two. They did most of them. We did great video interviews with them that we'll be posting on our website. And just the energy down there and the enthusiasm. And these are the people who don't get up to come up here for the most part. They're down there. They're working and they're grinding. And God bless them, because that's hard work. So really happy that we could bring some energy down there. We had the engineering theater down there, which looks fantastic, by the way. I spent about 7 minutes down there total, because we were just always wearing up here. But whenever I went down there, it was completely energizing. So I'm just really thrilled by that. And can't wait to, well, I can wait, but we look forward to having you next year. I'll take a week off and I'll get back to planning. We're going to do Device Talks West first, October 16th and 17th. It's going to be a slightly different take, but I think it's going to be very important and powerful. But we'll be back here in Boston right around the same time as this year, and we can't wait. So thank you to everyone who attended. Thank you to our conference teammates who absolutely killed themselves putting together new breakfasts, new award dinners, helping us with podcast booths and everything else. They really crushed it. So it's that's it. I think we're done. So thank you to everyone who came out for the podcast.
Thank you to everyone.
Thank you.
And thanks for being part of Device Talk.